from Quite the Thing Media. What does SMH mean? A movie podcast with Stephen Purden, Jack Shaw, and Colin McMillan.
Hi everybody, and welcome to episode 2 of What Does SMH Mean? From G4 Claims Headquarters. I'm Stephen, I'm welcomed by Jack and Colin. Welcome, lads. G4 Claims Headquarters.
Beautiful, it really is, man. It's absolutely roasting outside, and it's nice and cold in here.
It's which,
is what,
on it,
which is what
nice.
I am all about.
It's nice on Zoom anyway. It's nice to sit across the table from you.
It's actually good to see you. I've never seen you in the flesh. That's good to see you, man.
Right, it's lovely, lovely room. Proper, nice place to be recording rather than a spare bedroom in your house or whatever we usually do it and stuff like that. So yeah, it's lovely room. Nice.
Good, man. And obviously, it's been a while since we recorded the first episode. Due to my fault, I've been busy with work and stuff, but now we're here. In the flesh, doing it in a studio, I'm buzzing over it.
I'm here, by the way, I've been busy and all. Like, don't fucking make it as if we're wasteaways. We've all been busy.
I've had a lot of scenes in Coronation Street the last few months, so
mate,
it's been busy for me.
I've been watching you. It's been good. Are you enjoying it?
It's not really working that actually. It's like, honestly, it's not a mechanical that real work. But I've been busy. We've heard all the excuses, but it is good to finally be across the table and get right back into it. And a wee break for football, because we've all been kind of football daft during the Euros the last 2 weeks or so, having like little football. So we thought we'd maybe bring that in to the podcast a little bit through the form of our favourite football movies. Jack, have you got a favourite football movie?
Have I got a favourite one? My favourite one, probably The Football Factory. But again, that would have been out when I was, 18 or 19 or something. So it was probably just at that time in your life where you thought that was pretty cool, even though I was never involved in any of that shit. You know what I mean? I could have fucking vibe sleep. Never mind going out and fucking taking all the dogs and smashing fuck out of people. That's not my personality. But the film was... I enjoyed the film. You know, I thought Tammy Hirsan was a good bad guy. Billy, what was his name? I can't mind, but he was a really good bad guy. He felt a wee bit sorry for Zebedee, who got a little bit bullied. He ended up going off his nut. But yeah, I enjoyed that. How much of a football film actually is it, Matt? You know?
That's the first one that popped out of my head. Bill Bright, was it Bill Bright?
Bill Bright.
And Zebedee tells me what he's on it in the pub.
He's a bully, man. He's a horrible person.
Then you see him, he's a bully, but then the scene where he goes to have his dinner with his wife in the house.
Henpecked.
And he's sitting there, and he can see a bit of humanity for him going, yeah. You still think I'm alright, don't you? he's like a parody, isn't he? He is like a parody. But
yeah, it's like, this won't surprise anybody. I enjoyed this film, but it was so far removed from my experience of what football is. At no point did I think it was good. It didn't glamorise anything for me. Controversially, I'm going to say that I preferred Green Street to Football Factory. Honestly, I did, because I felt it was a little bit, it's a little bit more real.
Come on.
That's real in Londoner.
Well, he's forever blowing bubbles, right? But Frodo Baggins, they're looking at him. But I enjoyed it more. I think I saw it before this. And I don't think Football Factory, if you take Danny Dyer out of it, I think it loses so much. Because
no, I gave you Jack Mike, Tanner Sainz, bro,
and I don't really like him.
He's more believable than, like, Elijah Wood and fucking the boy from Sons of Anarchy. Do you know what I mean?
Charlie Hammond. Yeah. Nah, I don't know, but I did prefer Green Street.
Although Green Street, I nearly had a tear might end it when that happens to
you. It's good when he gets his own back and the guy at Costa Uni Place and stuff like that batters him and then just walks out the toilet whistling the West Ham. It's good. I like that part of it, but I don't know. I've got a season ticket at football and I've never seen a fight at the football. I've never been a hooligan fight. It's alien to me.
Aye, same. Especially you see, like, obviously in the Football Factory and back to that, the draws getting made for the cup and they're all, Bill's out with his wife, Danny Dyer and other guys in the nightclub and all that, and they're like, they get Millwall and it's like, fucking yes, and then all they're going to meet up. I remember a wee guy watching that going, I'm shite myself, the way they just all meet up and just writing about it, and not for me. But, great film, Mike.
Well, that's probably your two sort of hooligan films, like the two sort of main ones that your mind goes to straight away, right? If you're to talk about actual films that are about football, they're a little bit, I think, more difficult to get right because the football scenes in them always look fucking ridiculous because it's no professional football players. And no matter how hard you try, you can't make a normal person look like a professional football player. Yeah. And the scenes where they're crossing the ball or setting it up or all that sort of stuff always just fall flat on their arse.
Even if you use professional footballers, you use footage and you use CGI to change the faces or whatever, I just don't think football as a sport takes itself to cinema.
No.
Whereas for basketball, for talking sake, or American football has these breaks and then these plays that last 10, 15 seconds and decide the game and stuff like that. Whereas a 90-minute game of football, trying to bring it into a movie, it just doesn't really take to it.
Because, am I right in saying we are short at glory with McCoist? Did they use his actual goals that he'd scored for Rangers but just superimposed ourselves, like a green top on him? Like
they basically, you would change the colours, like flip the colours, basically. So green was blue and black was... That's basically what it
was. The Dream Team on Sky, they used a variety of different football clubs. One Rangers at one point.
Now you're talking, man. That's nostalgia. That's childhood nostalgia.
Dream Team was something else. But that was actual live, proper footage. And they used CGI to change the faces and stuff.
Aye. And what about Mean Machine? Vinny Jones? Do you like that?
Mean Machine? I do like Mean Machine. We've pointed about Mean Machine before on another show and did the kind of three variants of Mean Machine because there was the longest yard... was the original version, wasn't it? And then there was a remake of that, was Adam Sandler and people in it.
That's right.
Iron Grid or something.
I think The Rock was in it and stuff as well. Dead Iron. I think. Mm-hmm. And then obviously you had the soccer version or the football version for us with Vinnie Jones, when Vinnie Jones decided he was going to be an actor for a while. Now he's not an actor, he's on Come Dine With Me and stuff like that now. That's where his career's gone.
Aye.
I think he was on The Last Big Brother and stuff like that. He's not in a big actor anymore.
What's the one with Perry? Was that Escape to Victory?
Fairly's Escape to Victory, yeah.
Was Mean Machine not a kind of thing like that as well? Was that similar or not?
Similar in that it was people fighting the prison guards and stuff like that, whereas Escape to Victory was the Nazi captures, the Nazi prison officer sort of thing. Escape to Victory had Sylvester Stallone and goals and stuff like that. And Pelly. And I think in Escape to Victory, a lot of the football was Ipswich Town at the time. Was the guys who kind of did that as well. I think people always talk about Escape from Victory has been a really, really good one. The other one that sticks out as well is one I only saw a couple of years ago for the first time, Mike Bassett. England manager, was it?
Yeah, Mike Bassett, England manager, was decent. But again, very much of its time.
It's
very
a bit slapsticky.
It's a bit slapsticky, but you could see the similarities between that and the Graham Taylor documentary that was about his time at England.
Yes.
Very much taken from real life what was going on, because I think back in 80s and 90s football management was a little bit harum scarum, you might call it, little bit. It's not as professional as it was nowadays. You probably had to deal with bigger characters. There was booze in the scene, there might have been drugs in the scene. So I think Mike Bassett done that particularly well. I quite enjoyed it. We done it on another podcast a while ago, sort of reviewed that, and again, just of its time. But we watched it a year ago and it still stands up.
It did.
I think it was decent.
You're right to call it that. We watched a number of football documentaries of around the same time as well, and it was, believe it or not, quite true to life in terms of the pressure he was under and the shit that he got. And got a wee bit of hooliganism in that as well when the English and the Scotland fans met in the airport, remember?
Aye.
So, a little bit of sectarianism in there as well that you probably wouldn't get in films nowadays, with the English football team, the Irish football team calling each other some names that you might not get away with nowadays. Yeah. But
I'm going to throw one in there, guys.
Right.
The Damned United.
Right, I don't know what you're talking about.
Is that the...
Have you seen The Damned United?
No.
That's the manager one about... what's his name?
Clough,
yeah. Aye. I've seen the first 10 minutes of it or something
that
like
that. That is just a kind of... think about it to begin with. That is it's class. It's a... Sheen is amazing.
It's Michael Sheen, I have seen it. Sorry.
Is it a film or a documentary?
No, it's a film.
It's a film.
He's uncanny, his performance is uncanny. Playing Clough, and then you've got touches on the Leeds team for that time as well. Stephen Graham's in it, Martin Compson's in it and stuff. It's genius, it's a work of art.
Do you know what puts me off it? I always thought, all the interviews and all the stuff I've seen about Cloughy over the years, I was such a sexy about a dick.
Mate. I know what you mean, I know what you're saying, but you can't, as much as I think looking back he was a bit, he could walk the walk as well.
He won European titles and stuff like that. I mean, he knew what he was doing, but
watch that movie though.
Okay. Sheen was good. I have, now that you mentioned it, Sheen was brilliant in it.
He was class.
Stephen Graham, is he Billy Bremner?
He's Billy Bremner,
he's Billy Bremner, right. So he's got a bit of a Scottish accent, you know, but Stephen Graham's a great actor, to be fair.
Doesn't do things like
He doesn't.
He is probably the best actor of the day, I'd say.
He's definitely on the moment right now mm-hmm. in Britain. He's light years ahead. Yes, obviously. Ah, yeah.
He's flying down at
the only, the very last football one we'll mention, which is one that's so bad it's good, is Goal.
That become like, is another a Goal A? It's like the Fast and Furious.
Yeah, it's so bad it's good.
He started Newcastle, went to Madrid, and then the third one I've not seen, I think, was at the World Cup of Mexico. That's
I've never seen any of them, but I've heard it's...
They got, like, big cameos. Beckham was in it. Zidane, I think, was in it at a point. They come across these guys in bars and stuff like that, and they've got their very one or two lines that they say. But it was all right, but that fell down really bad about the thing we were speaking about earlier, that the football action was just awful. Like, the wee boy couldn't edit it right. It looked mince. But Goal was actually all right. They pumped a lot of money into that. They pumped a hell of a lot of money into the advertising and stuff like that. And it was all right. 2 and 3. I don't think I've seen them, to be honest with you.
The first one's so bad it's good. It's worth a watch.
I like things like that as well. They're so bad. They're good. What about Bender and Beckham? That's about
I have never seen it.
No, I used to. What's her name? Oh my god. The main girl in it.
Tell us your story and I'll find out her name.
Because when I was younger, me and my wife are still together at the moment. We got together when we were very young and made DVDs back in the day. Used to watch DVDs, she always had Bender and Beckham, and that was one we put on. And I thought it was alright. I can't remember her name, but she was
in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Keira Knightley.
I thought it was alright.
It's a decent enough film, yeah. Like I said, very much. Again, of its time, a British made film. There was a few of them kicking about that were similar and tone and style, but weren't all about football back in the day. I can't remember off the top of my head what they were called, but Bender and Beckham was decent enough, and again different because it was about girls. A lot of people don't think about women when they think about football.
A little bit now, but that was 20 years ago. Quite a high Asian cast as well, which was at the time as well. You wouldn't have put that and women's football together. So fair play to it. Got a challenge for you both. We talked quite a bit about kind of football movies. Can either of you name a better sports film than Cool Runnings?
Oh, better sports film. Cool Runnings is up there, isn't it?
Rocky IV specifically. I love Rocky IV.
I like the Rocky films, to be fair, but it's like a You Dead Man. That's definitely a thing for me. Cool Runnings, I can watch it over and over again. I'm surprised it's not been remade. That's that
would
be prime for a remake, you
don't
know think?
It's class, man. It's so good. I watched it with my wee boy not long ago and my daughter, and because me and my wife used to watch it when younger as well, and it's timeless.
I don't know who would do the John Candy, maybe like Kevin Hart or somebody, but they would need somebody to come in and do the kind of hopeless manager type role thing.
Coach. Billy Bob Thornton.
That could work, yeah.
Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah, like Bad Santa style.
In a Caribbean bar, just sitting, careers washed up. He'd be brilliant at that. And then you've got this bobsleigh team coming in.
I've not seen him in a film since that one with Halle Berry, but he's a really horrible fucking...
Monsters Ball?
Yeah, he's horrible in it.
That's a deep film.
That's the last thing of that I've seen Billy Bob Thornton in, yeah.
Best sports movie for me, but Raging Bull.
Guess what?
I've never seen it.
And now, a word from our sponsor, G4 Claims.
You've probably heard the lines before. Have you been involved in an accident? Were you the passenger? Here's something you might not have heard. G4 Claims can help you with your not-at-fault claim for free. They supply a like-for-like replacement vehicle. They can set up your injury claim and don't take a percentage. All your compensation comes to you. G4 Claims services are free, with charges going to the at-fault insurer. Not-at-fault claims, on your side. Call us on 01698 767172.
So So on our last episode, we spoke a fair bit about the movies of 1994. We fought long and hard about what to do in the rest of this episode. I'm excited to talk about the movies of 1995.
Genius, isn't
it? You may notice a pattern as these episodes go on. But as good as 1994 was, 1995 isn't far behind it. There's some really, really good stuff here. Stephen, let's start with...
I don't know if I can start anymore that you've not seen Raging Bull.
Stop being Raging Stephen and move
on,
man.
Raging Stephen.
I can't get it. Let's. What were you saying, Colin?
What I was saying was, before you so rudely interrupted,
yes.
Let's start with the film Seven. David Fincher, tales of a serial killer, Morgan Freeman, Brad Pitt, a guy basically knocking folk off but using the seven deadly sins and leaving little clues and different methods of murder and stuff like that. Really good film.
I really, really liked it. I remember at the time, I was very young, 12, getting away my age now, remember seeing it. For the listeners that haven't seen it, I'm going to spoil it. The bit at the end still gives me the fear when I watch it to this day, when he comes in the box. Aye, and you can see Brad Pitt's face, his performance is amazing. He's, what's in the box? And obviously it's not literally Gwyneth Paltrow's head, but it's his missus' head, you know what I mean? So it's Kevin Spacey, I think that kind of... We'll talk about it later on. He was in, obviously, Usual Suspects as well. I think that year, kind of, as much as his career took a wee bit of a dodgy turn.
Maybe a wee bit of a dodgy turn.
I think that was the kind of, when he came to the forefront of people's attention, you go, he's a very, very, because no matter what he's done in his life and what press he's getting, you kind of forget he's a fucking really good actor.
No, you can't take away the art and stuff. He's got a cracking IMDb page. I can find the word for CD there, right? So IMDb page.
He's coming to use after. Oh, if you fucking see my IMDb page. He's a great actor, he is, and he was chilling in that. Chilling.
Really
was. Like Morgan Freeman, and obviously the kind of dynamic with Brad Pitt and Morgan Freeman in it. You don't really know what you're going to get. Morgan Freeman's quite quiet and kind of standoffish, but then there's this, it goes on and you see he's spending time at his house, and Hank having. When Paltrow's character became quite close as well, and he became quite a kind of mediator between the two of them, and Brad Pitt's obviously embroiled in the case.
Jack, this was 26 years ago, and Stephen mentioned that Brad Pitt was really good in it. Brad Pitt is so much more than just this big pretty face. Like, he genuinely is a great actor. Probably better than he actually gets credit for, especially some of the later stuff he's done. That last Tarantino one that he did, what was it?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, he was amazing in that. So, so good. He's got a great bunch of films that he's done.
Yeah, I've still not seen that. Like, my favourite story about Brad Pitt is from Mike Tyson. When Mike Tyson was split up with his missus back in the day, but he went back to his house to pick something up. It was still his house at the time, and his wife was sleeping with this wee white guy, and the wee white guy was Brad Pitt before Mike Tyson made his breakthrough back in the day.
Really?
And Mike Tyson was, like, have you not seen Mike Tyson's one-man show?
No.
Brilliant, right, watch it. Spike Lee's got stuff to do with it, I think. But yeah, Mike Tyson got home, he seen that wee surfer dude guy in the car with his missus, and he said the fear in the boy's eyes was something that just made him feel like the proper man. But yeah, it was Brad Pitt sleeping with Robin, can't remember her name, but...
Robin Wright?
I think that would have been her, aye. So...
No way!
That's
a fucking... I think we can better that story than this podcast. No, that's what a story that is.
I don't know what's worse. Your wife's head in a box. Or Mike Tyson's
head. Gone with a bird. Oh, sorry, gone with a lady. And
canceled.
A man comes here. And a man comes here. And it's Mike Tyson. You're fucking... You're going, what the... Of all the guys, man.
Mike Tyson, he said he held himself back. Because at the time, I think he may have been in therapy or something, but he never attacked him.
It's not always been great holding himself back. Yeah, that's one thing, I suppose, well done, Mike.
Yeah, one man show. So that was decent, but that's a bit off-piste. Like, so the seven deadly sins, basically.
Mm-hmm.
What one, if any, are you guilty of? There's lust, gluttony, greed, sloth, wrath, envy, pride. I'm pretty gluttonous. I'm a big lad. We're not filming this. I don't think anyway, unless there's any secret cameras in this G4 claims place. But, yeah, I eat quite a lot. I eat at the wrong times and the wrong stuff. So that would probably be mine.
I am that as well.
I think I struggle to tell
you
one of them that I'm not.
Yeah, that is true, actually.
Like, as you're reading, I was like, fuck, shit. Oh, no. So,
Right, let's go through them one at a time. Right, lust. I'm not full of lust myself. What are you calling?
I'm lust after my wife every single day.
Snap.
She's a
big one. Snap.
Snap.
Okay.
I can cut.
Gluttony, we've agreed.
Wait,
on
that. Molly.
Yeah, gluttony and greed, they're kind of similar. I suppose greed is more possessions and things like that as well. You like your stuff, Colin, I know that.
I like my stuff. What a statement. Yeah, I do, and I go with the greed as well. I've never ever got McDonald's and not went large. So,
that's gluttony. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the gluttony stuff. Greed, I'm not good at waiting for things or saving for things. I just need to get them straight away, which makes it really difficult for Christmases and birthdays because they still try and buy me something that really bought it.
You want everything yesterday.
Yeah, totally.
And what about slothing about, Stephen? Sloth? Lazy?
Nowadays, I think the whole world has went that way.
Aye, maybe,
I think it's quite hard. I mean, I was talking to my neighbour while I was painting my fence yesterday, the rock and roll life that I've got. But I, speaking about how I used to play five, used to go a wee running again, keep myself active, that's kind of went down hill a wee bit. I think it's due to the whole pandemic and the comfort zone and nobody would go anywhere at the end. So I've got that a wee bit.
Has that made you angry as well? Has that made anybody angry?
Wrath? Makes me angry with myself a wee bit.
Right, okay, so we're getting there. We're hitting all five so far. Envy. Envious of people's stuff. Again, yeah, so about stuff.
See these people that win the lottery. I hate every one of them. See, the only thing that hates me more is that in the paper, window cleaner wins 50 million in the Euro Millions, but he's still doing his rounds tomorrow. Fuck off you, what are you doing, man? So yeah, I get me again with stuff like that.
I don't really care what Mark
Cops has done.
I'm not
a god,
man. Nah, not at all. Move on, Jack.
Well, Pride
Den's
the last one, so.
Pride?
You've got a hat on because you were scared that people might say your hair today, Colin, so you have.
Pride?
I need a haircut, it's a disaster today, man. I've actually got a headband
under. Yeah,
this is us getting back to the envy thing. I just got my second hair transplant, and he's putting a hat on to cover his long fucking beautiful locks and sits and actually waves it in my face like that, you know what I mean?
L'Oreal, mate.
See, we're back to envy now for me with that.
Right. I think they're all pretty common, you know. But supposedly, I think if you do any of them, you get fucking set on fire or something. I don't know.
Okay, it's basically because
you're
either.
That's it, man. Mm-hmm.
Bangs up. Back to the movie. Good movie. I liked it.
Really
good.
Yeah, I thought it was a brilliant film. Yes.
It was great.
And I think it's a film as well that you could watch it today.
Yes.
Even though you know everything that's happening, you know the twist and all that, you're still going to be at the edge of your seat and you're going to probably appreciate it even more.
I think it gave birth to films such as Saw and stuff like that, you know, because the crime scenes were very fucked up. Uh-huh. And then obviously that's all that Saw done for 8 or 9 movies as well. That's bizarre. They've got a fucking ride in Universal Studios or something as well. So, like, it sort of spawned that very graphic nature of killing people in a certain... Not fun's not the right way, but like a...
I'm David Fincher.
Twisted way.
He absolutely captures that, man. Like, see, when you watch that film, even with the weather, with the rain, and they're walking through, and they come in, the big guy's bending at the table, fuck it. It gets the whole... He doesn't pull any punches with the crime scenes. That's where it is, he gets it.
The gruesome deaths as well, because I think we're like Final Destination and stuff like that as well. Mm-hmm. Right, I remember that's the first final destination film. The plane, but the person walking from the bus was one. The person set herself on fire in the kitchen. It's just brutal, but it became a trope of these films, probably off the back of this.
Definitely.
Do you think you can go overboard then? Like Shaw, maybe I've done, like, you can just take it too far. Like, you've got to do it right.
Yeah. Hostel and all that, I think all the kind of films.
I was never a massive fan of Hostel, to be honest.
They're all for me. They lose for me, films like that lose the shock factor, if you know what I mean. When I watch a film like Seven, I go, holy fuck, man, that's brutal. But then when you watch these films, it's like, whoever's making these films, they're quite self-indulgent. Mm. Do you know what I mean? You watched it going, you're just fucking slitting a guy's fucking leg open for the sake of it.
It's shock for shock's sake rather than actually sort of any benefit to the story. And the 6 or 7 murders in Seven were... done well, I suppose, even though they were pretty gruesome.
Like I say, it's quite realistic and in your face, and that's the way, probably, if you're a detective in America or anywhere, that's what kind of happens, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Next film from that year, Heat.
Oh, how long have we got here? long have we got?
See how long it takes. Michael Mann's Heat. It was a remake of a film that somebody had made previously. He'd made a TV show or a low budget film or something before it, and this was, he finally got some money to make it properly. Mm. But probably the thing that everybody talks about with Heat is
the
coming together on screen.
That Robert De Niro is what made me want to be an actor.
Right. I thought you were going to say a gangster. But
as far back as I can remember. I remember it like yesterday. I remember the whole hysteria and the hype that Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, because they were in The Godfather Part 2 together, but they never had a scene together. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But on screen together, and I remember being like, I mean, I was away and I was only 12, but just going, I can't wait to see this, I can't wait to see it. And my mum and dad said, I can't wait to pictures see it. I'm going to take my pictures, because I was too young. And anyway, it comes out, watch it, and just being transfixed. And it was quite a different take for like Goodfellas, Casino, Godfather, all that, because it's more just kind of, it's more like cops and robbers, do you know what I mean? But just they two together was that coffee shop scene where there's a mutual respect for each other. Both of them are kind of, when he talks about his family and he's got a woman, he goes, I to Robin, Pacino says to De Niro, are you a fucking monk? He's like, no, I've got a woman. But De Niro's more quite guarded, doesn't give much away. But you can tell there's a respect for each other. He respects him as being a cop. He goes, if I get you, I need to take you down. But it's better than Paul.
It's got a special place for me because it's one of my first DVDs I ever owned. Mm-hmm. I remember getting a DVD player, and the time you could go to HMV and they did like 4 DVDs for £20 sometimes, mm-hmm. or 4 for £30 sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I remember getting a bunch of DVDs and Heat because I worked in a local like grocer's at the time. I was only like 15, 16 or something. Mm-hmm. And I remember the guy that worked in the shop telling me, watch Heat, it's got a car chase in it, it's amazing, you'll just love it. And I got it, but it always sticks in my head because it was the time when all your media and all your DVDs were like their pride of your place in your house, in your bedroom, you had them on your shelves and all that. Mm-hmm. Now I don't have any, but back then I did, and it came in one of those shitty cardboard boxes rather than a plastic proper box.
Got it.
So annoyed by it, so annoyed. Right. Stupidly annoyed, but just thought, it's ruined it, it looks shit.
It doesn't, and it can so easily just...
Yeah, it doesn't light up properly on the shelf and everything, but...
What did you do with your DVDs?
I Music Magpied a big bunch of them. I gave a bunch away to pals as well, and I just didn't need them. It was when I was moving out of my flat and in my house, I don't need these in my life anymore. Everything's available online.
Jack, you still get DVDs?
No, I sold them all to either Music Magpie or took them in a big bag up to FOP or somewhere like that and got... Not when they've been FOP, it would have been one of the cash generator places, because I think FOP or something stopped buying DVDs. Like, we're not buying them anymore. So like cash generator would have paid 20p a whip, I think. You know, so I took a bag, must have been 100 and got £5-6 for them or something. Yeah. Just to get rid of them.
I got to the stage though where I can literally get something on my TV now quicker. And I can go up to the shelf and get it.
Of course.
Put it in the PlayStation.
Mine's are still sitting in my loft. I renovated my garage, turned it in my man cave, get rid of all my DVDs, put them up a loft, and my missus was nipped my head saying, what are you doing with them? I just can't get rid of them. Even though I'm probably never going to look at them.
Never? No, you won't.
I won't. But I just can't.
I kept 3 box sets. Right? I've got a football collection of DVDs from a certain number of seasons from the 90s. I've got I've got the full box set on Blu-ray of Lost, and I've got the original Star Wars box set, and I kept them because they still looked pretty cool on the shelf. And the only one that's still on my shelf is the Lost one.
It would be different, I think, if you had like maybe family videos or something. I'm only saying this because me and Karen put out a video player there, aren't they? A VHS player.
Wow.
And VHSs, and she put these old VHSs in. She didn't know what was going to be on them, and it turned out to be like our sister's 30th birthday party and stuff like that. Things like 30, 40 years ago, and it was like it was nice to sit and watch stuff like that, But when it's fucking like Kangaroo Jack on DVD or something, you know, like they can't fucking
watch.
Nobody's about to watch that in 30 years' time, So. I don't see the point in why you're keeping them there, mate, to be honest with you.
I just can't. Yeah, I don't know. It's a sentimental. I don't know. I just can't. I don't know.
Just take your kids out one day for his being, right?
Aye, fucking DVDs. I don't throw that one. Well, what about Heat, Jack? What about Heat?
Heat is a film that I haven't seen in 20 years. Really enjoyed it. My dad was not big into films, but he loved Robert De Niro. Mm. So he let me watch it when I was younger as well. So, like... That memory of maybe sitting watching it with my dad is something that I remember more than the actual film, to be perfectly honest with you. I don't have like massive memories of the film, although you spoke about that respect thing. Do you think that's a real thing in real life, because you see it in documentaries where they'll interview a gangster and they'll be like, oh, it's his job to catch me, it's a game, and then you interview the cop. Or do you think that's just pushed now again, just as a sort of documentary trope? That
it's very,
because the cops must fucking,
it's very filmable, but the gangsters must hate the police for every fibre of their being, because they're going to take everything they've gained away from them, and the police must hate the gangsters because they have no work to do. So I don't folk give me work in work, and I don't blame them. They send me spreadsheets. It must be even worse for that. I think it, but it's a nice story for Hollywood.
It is a nice story, but I think even when you, like, I'm big on The Sopranos and stuff, and there's a lot, there's like Agent Harris in The Sopranos always has a scene with Tony in the deli or whatever, and Sadri Arles, and always
they always have a nice conversation, they always sit and respectfully talk.
I believe in America, or even here as well, I believe a lot of the coppers need these bad guys to go, look, I'm trying to get after him, I know you know him, and I can give you a dirt on him if you give me something on him, or that, what's that way?
Yeah.
But whether, like De Niro and Pacino sitting there, and he's after him, and they're just sitting having a coffee together, I think, but to believe the romance, the romantic side of Hollywood, I just went, when I seen that, I was like, holy fuck, man, it's like just an act off.
But do you think subconsciously the bird, but like or even consciously trying to out act each other? I'm going to be better than him.
Gets a line or something, and going again on his single, going bastard.
Do you know what I mean? It's like me and you in my potting track, man. I stole my line. Okay, fancy that would be. We mentioned this film a bit earlier on, but we'll talk about it in a little bit more detail now. Who is Kaiser Soze?
Oh,
The Usual Suspects. I think it's up there. If you tell me a film with a twist, you're going to say Usual Suspects, or you're going to say I See Dead People. That's the two, isn't it?
Sixth Sense.
That's your two.
I would say so. I mean, that you still, when you see that scene at the end where Kevin Spacey's walking away and he fixes his wrist and he fixes his shoe and he starts walking, you're like, holy fuck, man. Do you know what I mean?
But you feel daft. You feel
as if
you've been fucked.
Totally. It's iconic, that scene. That scene's absolutely iconic. And I think the movies, am I right in saying it's quite an underrated movie? I don't know if people speak about it enough when I talk about great movies. I don't think I speak about it enough when I talk about great movies.
I think it's one of those films that came out and then it got eclipsed by Tarantino.
Maybe.
I think, like, Pulp Fiction came out, and even Jackie Brown, and just the whole Tarantino world came through, and that kind of put a shadow over it a little bit.
Because why these films where me and my mate sit and talk, and that's why these films, if I'm sitting in the house and I see it, I would stop and watch the rest of it because I think it's brilliant.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't know.
I think because the biggest thing about it is the twist. Once you know it.
Maybe, aye.
Don't feel I'm really rushing to watch again. Although, it is a good film, but once you know that, poop, right at the end, you know it, that is the biggest thing about it. They've even done an episode in Derry's Girls about it.
Yeah. That's a problem, having that big thing at the end of the film, though, because you lose track of anything good in that film up to that point, because it was a great film and it took, you stayed with it until the end to get the reward of the twist, but that twist is all you'll think about, whereas the first 2 hours of that film was really, really good without the twist.
It's
definitely worth definitely worth that second watch, same as The Sixth Sense, so that you then try and spot the parts that you missed the first time.
Do you know where there's a lot of value in a film like that, particularly this one with a big twist? Watching it with someone that's not seen it.
Aye.
Because I do this a lot with my wife, like, for watching stuff that I've seen already, I'll have one eye on the telly and one eye on her reaction. And it's amazing, and just seeing the shock on the face, or, oh my God, I can't believe that's just happened. I don't know why, I'm a bit weird. I like showing people stuff that I've seen that they've not seen.
Definitely. I sat and watched Ozark during last year's lockdown. I don't know what
they've seen it. I've heard a lot about it, but I've never actually watched it.
It's fucking brilliant. My missus had never seen it, and we were struggling for things to watch. And I says, look, watch Ozark. I'd already watched the first season, and I think the second season, they were already out. So I was like, right, I want to watch it, but we'll watch it. And I was the exact same. One eye on the Terry and one eye on her watching one. But I think I might do that, watching Usual Suspects. I don't think Nicola's seen Usual Suspects. I might watch it again just to see her reaction to it, because it's, I mean, everybody knows now, it's one of the kind of films where you mention Kaiser Soze.
Yeah.
It's a household name.
Yeah, that's when people know that. Know that film is the Kaiser Soze film.
Exactly. Right. So, I think, as I said, I think it's overlooked, underrated a wee bit, but can see what Jack's saying. Once you know what happens, your load's kind of shot.
That's a way to put it. Aye. Brian Singer directed that. He obviously went on to direct all these sort of really massive CGI-type films. I don't know a lot about directing films, right, obviously. But what makes you take a jump for that? Do you not think you'd want to be a director of a film like Usual Suspects, where it's more about the story and stuff like that, rather than directing to green screen all the time?
Exactly.
I don't know.
It's a weird jump to go for a movie like that. It's a wee bit like, what's his name? Todd Phillips directed the old school The Hangover. What did he just direct recently? The Joker.
Right,
so
okay.
It's a weird jump as well.
Do you need to earn your stripes though to get yourself a job like Joker, get yourself a CGI budget like
that? I was looking, and we're talking about what year we're going to do, and I was looking through like box office and all that, and what Jack's saying there, like Brian Singer are going to do big CGI. I mean, I don't know if it's just me. I would rather, from a director, sit and talk to an actor about the performance and what we're going to do and the story here, the character arc, your character's been on and gone on and all that stuff. But if that's what your bag is,
it's not the real though. It's Tom Hanks talking to a beach ball shite.
That major drama, fuck.
He's another guy that's been another guy that's been accused of sexual assault, by the way. I don't know much. Yes, didn't know that until I've just googled him there.
Yeah. He did a TV show and he got in trouble for some behaviour on that as well.
Right, okay, so.
Kevin Spacey
must
have had a great time.
What a rap party that was. any good cartoons that came out that year, Jack?
The greatest one.
Best.
It's got to be Toy Story came out, yeah, you forget. 1995.
I can't believe it was 1995 that came out. I cannot believe that. Best cartoon movie of them all, in my opinion.
It still stands up as the best, I think, yes.
And my two kids can testify to that.
It's definitely up there for me. I'm struggling to think of something better, but I just don't want to jump into a full commitment as soon as the best cartoon ever.
You're wanting to think of something better because you want to shit in a parade here.
No, I don't, because I love Toy Story. I love it. It's Pixar. Steve Jobs was involved in it. It's got a very poor voice actor involved in it.
He's got a fucking Tom Hanks again. This is now becoming. I hate Tom Hanks. Yeah. Podcast.
What does SMH mean? It means we hate Tom Hanks.
Not
me's calling it. But no, it is amazing. You've got a friend in me. You watch this cartoon. I find it very difficult sometimes to watch a cartoon and get fully invested in it because there's something not quite real about it because it's drawn or it's animated and stuff like that. But it does a really good job of bringing you back to your childhood and genuine feelings of sadness when you remember getting rid of certain toys and
of course
getting bored of stuff. And double sadness now because you're gutted at the time you're probably too old to play with Ghostbusters anymore. And now I'm gutted I didn't hold on to them. But we have all been there with toys, and your mum and dad start clearing out attics or moving house and stuff appears again, and that nostalgia. But not just Toy Story on its own, it paved the way for everything else that Pixar's done.
It's the benchmark, really, it's the thing that's the catalyst for the rest of
it. It lets people see that you could give that budget to an animator and a picture house like Pixar. And you could do some amazing stuff.
And attract great actors like Tom Hanks.
Yes, great actors like Tom Hanks. No.
But it is, like you say, like the whole nostalgia thing, looking back, and what Jack was saying, what does stand the test of time, because now I'm watching that with my kids, my 8-year-old and my 5-year-old, and I'm experiencing that well again, because they're getting a wee bit old for their toys, and they're getting rid of their toys now, and I'm fucking sitting there. I'm nearly greeting, man. I'm going to almost even yesterday, I was sitting playing with you with your... Whatever your toys are.
You're getting, because you think, I paid £60 for that.
That as well. Do you know what I mean? No, it's a... In my, it's a classic. You'll never...
But the Buzz Lightyear was the big toy of that Christmas then. And...
Yeah, we're getting a Buzz, man.
I've never really thought about it, no. Buzz Lightyear's cool. Like, I'd rather Buzz Lightyear toy than just a cowboy.
He's got a proper American voice. He's got buttons. Woody's a full strength.
I was a little bit.
Look at my boots.
I was a little bit old by then for getting toys, but my nephews were 6 and 7 at the time, you know. And I remember my brother trying his hardest to get it, and I don't think he managed to get it. It was just absolutely impossible to get. Like,
stop poisoning him now. He's got a Woody, he's got a Buzz, and that's what I mean. It's 1995, man. That's mental, do you know what I mean?
I went to see the most recent one at the cinema, but that was about what, 7 or 8 years ago now. Was it Toy Story 3? I can't mind. I bet see one of them, and I was. I was crying. I was crying in the cinema, man. Like, fuck up.
That's how they're ending it.
Yeah. I was. There was tears in the cinema when I watched it for a cartoon. I'm quite soft when it comes to films sometimes, you know, especially if I've got a hangover. This has been spoken about before. It's the same. Like, hangover, man. Like, see, like a Sunday TV. I can only watch things like, I don't know, a Taskmaster or something that I know is going to have nothing that's got any emotion in it, man. Yeah. But Toy Story 3 or 4, man, got me right in the feels for sure. Yeah. Monsters, Inc. was decent and all. I like that. Finding Nemo. Because that's probably my top three. If I was to pick a top three, with Toy Story, Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo would probably be my three up at the top. Because there's so many of them now, but there's Cars, there's bikes, there's all sorts.
Coco was a good one recently.
Yeah, it was really good. Inside Out was really good as well. Really clever.
Who was the one Jamie Foxx done the voice of? Just
the musician.
That was pretty good.
Yeah, I can't remember what it was called. That was good.
I think Karen's got that recorded.
It's good. They've got pretty much unblemished record. Jane Austen wrote a lot of good books. Sense and Sensibility, Emma, various other things, and it was brought forward in 1995 for a new generation through the movie Clueless, Stephen, with Alicia Silverstone, Paul Rudd.
I shouldn't have let you near the fucking document, you. Well, Jesus.
Clueless. The only good thing I heard about that there, it was all kind of noise, the movie Clueless. No disrespect to Clueless, maybe some of your listeners are big fans of Clueless, but Paul Rudd's the only good thing there, really.
No, Alicia Silverstone's a good
thing. Aye.
If you love Clueless, you don't get Mean Girls, you don't get 10 Things I Hate About You.
Alicia Silverstone disappeared pretty quickly after it, not?
She was Batwoman, remember?
No.
So I've got to listen to some audio podcast, but I pointed the nipples there. She had the suit with the nipples.
Clueless. My wife likes it. She used to watch it a lot when I was younger. I can't really comment too much, but I can't remember much about it. I remember at the time it coming out thinking Alicia Silverstone's a very attractive girl. Jack? I'm out. That's
Paul Rudd still looks the same.
Aye, he's just like, cool, and he's
Ant-Man now, isn't he?
Aye.
Is it work he's getting done? I don't know. Like, how does he look the fucking exact same?
I believe Paul Rudd is the type of guy that just takes life as it comes, man. He just seems quite chilled.
It's like Pharrell. Pharrell's a vampire. Aye. He looks the same as he did like 25 years ago.
Paul Rudd's the same as him then. Aye, that sort of. I don't know if it's a.
It must be that Hollywood water.
Or some sort of moisturising diary or something he's got. I don't know. It's not really something that I'd do.
Stephen, I don't know if you've ever seen this film. It's called Casino.
Right, Casino. Oh, man. Right, this is 2 good years, man. 94, the last one. 95 is fucking class. But. Again, underrated in my opinion. A lot of people say it's like a poor man's Goodfellas. They say it was overshadowed by Goodfellas a wee bit. But Casino for me is what I liked about it was Joe Pesci kind of had De Niro on the back foot throughout the full film, I think. Do you know what I mean? Where De Niro, I'm a massive De Niro fan, as you know. You watch Goodfellas, you watch Raging Bull, you'll see things in Raging Bull where the Niro is finally, I get what I'm saying.
Is it about chasing the bulls? That's
what it's about. But Casino, I think one of the standouts of Casino was Joe Pesci, and Sharon Stone was fucking phenomenal. She was phenomenal in it. And as a character actor and kind of not the biggest part in it, James Woods, fucking outstanding actor.
The casting is phenomenal in it. Like, I think that's. I prefer Casino to Goodfellas, which is probably something that not a lot of people say. Casino's basically how this podcast came about. I think we were having a conversation about it on one of the sort of first interviews we done with yourself, Stephen. Mm-hmm. We decided, right, you obviously love Casino and love films in general, so that's what we're doing this for. But Casino's definitely up there, man, for sure.
Soundtrack,
yeah. I don't have the one-star review in front of me, right, but there is a one-star review, and it was by some guy, and the reason he's gave it one star is because the music is too good. That's the four or five words. Music was too good. I don't know if he was trying to get the music took away from the film. I don't, or if he was just a fucking idiot. I think he was just an idiot. But yeah, one star because the music was too good.
The animals singing House of the Rising Sun, and just watch that movie. I think it's when all the kind of monsters start getting killed at the end, and just as De Niro's car blew up, and they're all fucking Nicky Santoro's been fucking buried in the desert. It's just looking back, like the scene they had in the desert, Joe Pesci's performance in this scene where he's fucking screaming. De Niro, don't ever go over my head again. You're only out here, you only exist out here because of me. Just watch him going. I mean, these guys, I mean, there's not many people I've watched can blow De Niro off screen, but Joe Pesci in that movie is, he's phenomenal in Goodfellas, but for me, in Casino, he's fucking electric, man. Yeah, yes. He's electric. Him and Sharon Stone are just on a different planet.
It's a film that's almost 3 hours, and it doesn't drag.
No.
It doesn't have an unnecessary act. It's literally every part of it's golden, which is when you get into that sort of running time in a film, you can usually cut 20-25 minutes out of it, it's not needed. But with that film, everything in it is important, it's there for a reason. If anything, like maybe not the best thing to say in a movie podcast, I dream of a world sometimes where Casino is genuinely like a 12-20 part HBO series. Look at me, go back to the origin, how they meet each other.
That would work.
It's
a true, it's based, I mean, I think it's Nicholas Pileggi wrote book, kind of wise guy, and then wrote Casino, and Scorsese's obviously seen these books and went, right, and obviously Goodfellas is real, Henry Hill, and these characters like Nicky Santoro and Ace Rothstein, they're based on real characters in fucking Las Vegas at the time. So you're going, if HBO were wanting to get the origins of that, they could start, that could be a fucking absolute,
be amazing,
4, 5, 6, 7 part series like The Sopranos or something, you know what I mean? So,
could be tremendous.
Do you think we're in a world now where we're past that, the Sopranos and a gangster series like that, like there's that much TV nowadays as well that people just aren't as interested. I don't know, like we're guys that are nearly 40,
but it's definitely an issue with TV viewing figures aren't what they were, but I still do think that the quality stuff does still make its way through. If you look at some of the stuff that like HBO and premium cable are doing, there's, for all the shit that's out there, there's so much reality crap, particularly in America, there's networks just for reality stuff. But even things like Better Call Saul that's coming through and stuff like that just now, the really, really good stuff I think is outstanding, but you have to swim through a lot of shite.
There just seems to be a lot of Marvel stuff. Like that's the thing that kind of gets me, is yeah, there's a million different TV shows about Marvel
that's
characters.
Yeah, when you say that, that's what I was thinking. That's what has, that for me isn't it really, it's not really my bag. That, and what Colm is saying, I think reality TV has killed the TV we grew up loving. I think reality TV is like, it's everywhere now. Like you go into these channels, it's like Keeping Up with Kardashians, Love Island tonight, it's going to be starting.
Keeping Up with Kardashians is just finished, by the way. Carl was telling me.
I'm up with that.
But all these things, whoever, I mean, don't get me wrong, these people that have got involved in stuff like reality TV, like Love Island, like Big Brother, like fucking Keeping Up with Kardashians, they're clever people, man. They're going, this is selling. People want to watch it. People want to watch it. These guys must be worth a fortune. But I do still think there is a window there. I don't think it's as big as what it was then with Sopranos and movies like you see and stuff. But I think if you were to get something made new about like a gangster, whatever, like a serious drama or a genre, like a gangster genre thing, I mean, you only look at Peaky Blinders. Peaky Blinders is a BBC show. It is HBO quality.
Yeah.
It is absolute. The costumes, the writing, the direction, the performances, the sets, everything is HBO quality, where you could go, HBO made that and I believe you.
Yeah. The BBC get budgets, they can do that. Mm-hmm. It's few and far between. Mm-hmm. I just think TV isn't, there's nothing as appointment viewing anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, see the idea of everybody rushing in because first night at 9 o'clock, mm-hmm, it's time for such and such. Mm-hmm. That just doesn't happen. People discover things now at different, mm-hmm, times, and some people discover shows 2, 3, 4 years after they've aired, and that's where we are now, exactly, with streaming and boxing.
And then it takes a click of a button on your phone on social media, yeah, to go, this was only 4 years ago, but I'm just going to flip to through and see what happened at the end.
Yeah.
And you're already knowing it's done.
Well, funnily enough, during lockdown, we've started watching something just got 17 seasons. And we're into season 7 now.
17?
Yeah, we're into season 7.
Keep it up with your lashes.
It's Grey's Anatomy, so it is.
It's Grey's Anatomy, right? Honestly, mate,
Kevin McKidd.
I slated that show for such a long time, right? And then I watched some of it and it's amazing. And
Kevin McKidd directs it all. He's
great in it. He's really, really good.
Maybe try and get him on this podcast. I know Kevin quite well.
That would be good. What role does he steal from you?
Eh?
What role does he steal from you?
Oh, man. Too many to mention.
That's the issue with that. I'm seven seasons in. Mm-hmm. I know naturally some of the actors have moved on and stuff like that, but see, not Googling and trying to find out stuff. I pick up my phone and put it back down again all the time.
He's honestly like, he's living the room with that, man. He's, I mean, he directs a lot of it now as well, and
he came in about season four as a trauma soldier, and then he got a job as the head of trauma.
He knows his stuff.
Is this the ginger guy?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Then he married Justina Yang. That's where we're up
to. I'm heavy pounding, Colin. I watched it. I watched the first seven or eight series. I'll get there eventually. When it was live, in inverted commas.
Yeah.
I did fall away from it after season eight, Colin.
17 seasons, though. That's a big
killer.
How many episodes are in a season?
24.
Oh, mate, come on. You've not watched Agent Bull, for fuck's sake.
During lockdown, right, we've watched about 8 seasons of Below Deck, 5 seasons of...
Below Deck? Have you watched Agent Bull?
5 seasons of Married at First Sight Australia.
Married? Oh, come on. Fucking it.
But we might watch Agent Bull once we finish season 17. Right? I'll tell you what, when I finish Grey's, Agent Bull's on the list. Right?
Oh, Raging Stephen again, man.
We'll finish off really quickly just with a little bit of look at the trash of 1995, because we've talked about a lot of the really, really good stuff, but there was some really, really poor stuff there as well. There's a wee list here, but the one that jumps out for me, Jack, Showgirls. It served one purpose and one purpose only.
I'd be definitely chugging away to that as a child, man.
there's that
bit in the pool.
I remember it.
I was 11 at the time or whatever, so what else were you going to do? You know, like, there's albums like, I'm not pulling the head off it to Judge Dredd, for example, that was at 95.
Right.
I think one of the biggest ones
in
95, but was one of the most expensive movies of all time. Waterworld.
Kevin Costner.
Is that
Except at the time, like, Avatar and stuff, that's probably more expensive now, but yeah, it was, and it lost every penny, I think.
Destroyed Kevin Costner for a real rap movie, didn't it? Because he was the kind of go-to man for box office and all that.
I think they tried to make their money back by having a show at Universal or one of these places where they had the Waterworld show, and I think that was to try and make the money back, or to try and get some money back for the amount that they spent. They spent hundreds of millions on it, and it took like 5% of that out of the box. I don't think it was... I remember watching it and thinking it was actually not a bad film. Like, it wasn't fucking terrible. Yeah. Like, it wasn't fucking Showgirls or Johnny Mnemonic, you know.
Was that Keanu?
Keanu. You know, I mean, that was absolute fucking garbage. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers was at 95 as well.
Oh.
I was the first one I ever went to see by myself, to be fair. My mum took me to the cinema. I went to see that, and she went, I'm not going to go see that. But she let me go by myself, so. Another memory.
Power Rangers was quite racist, when you look back on it. The black Power Ranger was black. The girl Power Ranger was pink.
The yellow one was... China, would you?
It's quite problematic.
It's quite problematic nowadays,
right? Rangers, but back then it was the best thing ever. And that you talked about Buzz Lightyear being a hard toy to get at Christmas.
Power Rangers would have been.
Power Rangers was more.
It's morphin' time, man.
Yeah.
That still was about like. There's about bloody 1,000 different versions of Power Rangers on TV now.
There's quite a few of them, aren't
there? Power Rangers was a Chinese or a Japanese TV show. I think it was a Japanese TV show. And when they made the first couple of seasons of Power Rangers, it was actually the toy company that bought the rights to this Japanese programme. And what they did was they filmed all the parts without helmets on with the American actors and then just sliced in all this old footage from old Japanese TV show and made the Power Rangers on the cheap because of that. All the effects, all the Power Rangers stuff. It was this old programme they bought for peanuts from Japan or somewhere. And it was, what's the name of the toy company?
Hasbro,
that's the one.
Hasbro.
They just bought the IP, pumped out the toys, and the guy made absolute fortune. There's a really good podcast about it that tells you the whole story of Hasbro and how they did it. But Power Rangers was literally a piss take of an old show.
That's genius in the fortune. Can I just say about 95, there's one film I've got to mention, I wanted to mention, that's got a special place in my heart. Friday.
Is that because of is that the one with
it just reminds me a lot of smoking weed when I was younger, like Ice Cube and Chris Tucker.
Oh, right, that's not the film I was thinking of, but yeah, okay, I do.
Were you thinking of the horror film?
I'm thinking of Freaky Friday.
Oh, no, right.
I thought
of
Friday 13th or something.
Oh, I was thinking Freaky Friday with the
strip. Friday was just a film I remember seeing and just going, that's just two guys just sitting down. I mean, just sitting, smoking weed and just talking on a porch in downtown.
I went through a stage in my life where I smoked a bat of grass, and those films are very much high up in the order. That Half-Baked with Dave Chappelle was one that we watched. That was at a time when the DVD get dished about, because I don't think you could get it here. And when it was like an import DVD.
I had it
before
you, man, if it was jumping the scratch. It was scratched out your fucking...
You'll put the box with a roach in it, though.
Bye.
Friday's a classic, and Dangerous Minds. Because I had a crush on Michelle Pfeiffer when I was younger.
Coolio featuring Elvin.
Mm-hmm.
Was Michelle Pfeiffer your first crush that you can remember?
My first crush, do you know who I really liked when I was younger? Terry Hatcher.
Oh, from Lewis and Clark.
Yeah, well, that's not... I thought you were going to say something that a bit sort of left field. Terry Hatcher was like one of the most beautiful women in the world.
I don't see it.
Desperate Housewives, the last thing she did.
Desperate Housewives, she did. And I also had a crush on Salma Hayek for the dance in Desperado. No, Desperado, from Dusk Till Dawn.
Yeah, that's a good one.
From Dusk Till Dawn, was that 95?
Desperado,
oh,
95.
That's the next episode.
Oh, right, the next episode, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Dusk Till Dawn, I don't think what the earliest one was. I think it was Philippa Forrester on CBBC.
That's the film, mate.
Yeah, and then pretty much it was Rosie Webster on Coronation Street. And that was it forever.
And now you're in it.
And now I'm in it, and I'm just waiting to cast alongside her. But I think that's a good place to stop for this week. To show the great planning we do, we've already told you what the next episode's going to be about. It's going to be about 1996. Mm-hmm. And a few surprises, I'm sure, as well. So I've been Colin, you've been...
I've been Jack, thanks.
I've been Stephen, and this has been...
What Does SMH Mean? Thanks for listening.
That was a Quite the Thing media production.